Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome to Hoth Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seekers.
And I'm Haley Birdwood.
And we're thrilled to be back with you. In this episode, we're going to talk about Ahsoka, which wrapped up recently its 8-episode run on Disney+. This was a controversial show. There were high expectations going in, both from people who had seen Star Wars Rebels and people who had not. It's leading up to the big Dave Filoni movie about the war between the New Republic and Thrawn. So there were a lot of expectations going into this show about how all these characters were going to be portrayed and where we were going towards in terms of the story. I think there's going to be some interesting disagreements in this episode, and I'm looking forward to getting into it. Maybe we could start off with some very quick overall thoughts, sort of your elevator pitch for folks if they're like, should I watch Ahsoka? How is it? What happens in it? Is it worth my time? Grace, what would you say to that? Is it worth people's time? Did you like how how Dave Filoni brought us the story over 8 episodes?
You know what? I don't really think it was worth people's time. I'm not totally sure it succeeded in either of its goals, which is appealing to people who have seen Rebels and appealing to people who have not seen Rebels. I think for people who have seen Rebels, or just speaking for myself, there were a lot of things, a lot of characterization decisions that I was not really happy with. And then I don't really see how you could fully understand what was happening in the show without having seen Rebels. So if you have seen it, I'm not sure you'll like it. And if you haven't seen it, I'm not sure you'll like it. So all that to say, like, it's not my least favorite Star Wars show, but it is far and away from my favorite, and it is up to each person to decide whether it is worth investing 8 hours of their life, or 6 hours of their life, eight hours of their life in something. And that's a personal decision. I would say probably not.
And Haley, where do you stand on this?
So I'm just very sad about how it went. On the positive side, I am only reinforced in the fact that the characters that were created in the original Rebels show are some of the best characters in all of Star Wars.
Hard agree.
I think that Ezra, for the brief time that we saw him, was so just portrayed really well. That was one of the characters that seems like I didn't even have to try to squint or be convincing myself that it was the same character. It was just the personality was there. He looked a lot like him. It was just very well done. And I mean, some of the other actors did really good jobs too. But for me, my biggest problem with it is there wasn't enough. Okay, so first of all, the pacing was just really slow. So it felt like we weren't getting enough story in the few episodes that we had. The dialogue was really limited, so we weren't actually getting conversations that real people would have in situations like this. We were getting really just sort of short. I don't know. Maybe they were trying to be poignant, but it was just it felt cheap, or we just weren't getting something that had been thought through. And my theory is maybe they were just nervous about, they were in live action and they didn't want that the actors to be portraying the characters in ways that didn't align with the cartoon versions. And so maybe just the easiest way to deal with that is just to have them speak less. But it was frustrating for me. And then you didn't get enough emotional payoff in the end when they actually did find Ezra. It would be normal to hug and talk about what actually happened and not just have a few quips about, oh, I knew you would come back, and oh, I was fine with these little turtle people, and no actual deeper conversation. I don't know. I just in every aspect, there was not enough. And so I just found that incredibly frustrating, that it was all sort of leading up to where the story could have started, instead of what it actually did. But that is my big overarching complaint.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed out the pacing. I think both in terms of like the story pacing and also like within individual scenes, the dialogue pacing, it was all just off. Like it was very, there was like a weird like artifice to it. Like it wasn't how people would naturally talk to each other. People didn't have chemistry. Like, I mean, a big part of this, as we'll talk about in a minute, is that Ahsoka herself was not very pleasant to watch. Rosario Dawson just doesn't have what it takes. And so Ahsoka did not seem like the character that we knew, even if you grant, you know, the passage of time. I mean, there would just be these long scenes, these plotting conversations with like the dialogue moving at, a few words an hour. It was difficult as a Rebels fan to watch how Ahsoka was portrayed there. And, you know, I will say there were some things I liked. I mean, I enjoyed the little side jags to sort of focus on the New Republic and how the state of the galaxy is affecting what our heroes can do, and especially Hera. I enjoyed that. I thought Sabine was wonderful, except for a last-minute twist, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And I'm glad to hear that Grace agrees with me on this, because I know Grace and I are going to disagree on something else, so I'm glad that we can at least agree on that, that we'll get into all of that. I don't know that I'm qualified to say if it's worth people's time. I do agree with Grace, though, that I think if you go in having watched Rebels, you are going to be somewhat disappointed in characterization, and if you go in having not watched Rebels, you can do it. It can work, but I just think you miss a lot, and so... It was an uneven show for sure. I don't know where I'd rank it, you know, not necessarily going to say that it was like worse than Obi-Wan, but definitely no Andor, and definitely no Mandalorian season one. I don't know where we'd put it with Book of Boba Fett, but maybe that's in a whole other conversation. let's get into Ahsoka. She's the title character. This was one of the most fraught situations for, you know, the Star Wars franchise since Disney bought it, which is bringing this character into live action. She's beloved. We've grown up with her, and now we're going to have to watch her as an adult, portrayed in live action by, as we should point out, an actress whose casting was very controversial for some real life reasons. There are still folks who are very disappointed that Disney would even get into that. But if you just look at how she portrayed the character, I kind of hinted at this a minute ago, but I think she falls flat. I don't think she has the warmth and the heart that Ahsoka needs. She's too wooden. She's too stoic. There are times when she actually looks bored, which is wild to me that Ahsoka could be bored in some of these situations. And I guess my question for the two of you, and feel free to just, you know, go on any tangents you want about Ahsoka here, but there are folks who say it's fine that Ahsoka was like kind of wooden and not very warm in the first few episodes, the first, you know, three quarters of the show, because it's been a while since we've seen her. She's been changed by years of war, and she's not going to be that plucky, upbeat person that we saw even in Rebels. Do you buy that? Is that a reasonable argument? Maybe Haley, we'll start with you.
So I get it, and I couldn't. To begin this, and to be kind, I could not bring a cartoon character to life, as it, like, that just takes a lot of skill. And I do want to say that the makeup artists did a really good job. Like these are people who are working hard. But I also agree with a lot of what you said, Eric. It's just like every time she was on the screen, I like what I was saying with Ezra, I didn't have to think about it. That was Ezra. With Ahsoka, it was like, oh, I had to kind of try to convince myself. And I see where they're coming from. Oh, she's older and, I don't know, more wise and stoic, like you're saying. But I think I get that. I can see the point of it. I don't super agree with it. And like, I saw a comment that I agreed with, which was, for some reason in this show, because of the lack of like emotion, and like, this is most of the actors except for Ezra, there is a lack of emotion throughout the whole season, in places where like normal people would be showing a lot of emotion. The only times we see her like sort of excited or smiling is when she's like killing people.
Yes, when she's fighting.
Yeah. When she's fighting, and like, okay, but if she's supposed to be the embodiment of the light side of the Force, it doesn't make sense that she would be like really happy when she's killing people. So I get, like, I feel like that's my biggest problem with it. beyond, and I do feel, I mean, maybe it's a conspiracy theory, but I do feel like so much of it, like the dialogue pacing in the way that she didn't really do much. And I think she's talked about this with like the prosthetic she has to wear, like she's just sort of limited physically. I just think so much of these problems are because it's live action and not a cartoon. And we talked about this episodes ago where it's like so much happens in Rebels and it's so much cheaper to do it as an like animated like show. You can just do more. You can do more with the story. And it seems like we were saying that with some of these characters where it's like you're just limited in real life while you're trying to, you know, it's a very fantastical story and it has elements that are just hard to translate into real life. And just the character of Ahsoka is one of those elements that's hard to sort of pull off.
Yeah, I would agree with everything that both of you have said and agree that I don't think Rosario Dawson pulled it off. I think she was a bit miscast. I also don't buy the argument that, oh, she would be older now, she would be more stoic. I don't think that fits with what we saw of her in Rebels. And I think, frankly, it's very difficult when you are comparing to Ashley Eckstein and what a great job she did. And another comment that I thought that I saw that dovetails with what Haley was just saying is that Rosario Dawson, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, they're not voice actors. And you have this issue where because of the prosthetics, they are limited in what their face can do. And then they also don't have the skills to display emotion solely through their voice. So I think that was part of it. And yeah, I wasn't pleased with her characterization as she was written. I wasn't pleased with her characterization as Ahsoka, as Rosario Dawson was playing it. And then one last thing I will say that I felt like was really emblematic of all of my issues with her is that the fight scenes, they were very interesting. They had good choreography, but they always looked wrong to me. They just looked like people pretend fighting to me, which, you know, their lightsabers are not real. But then we see someone like Hayden Christensen, who is incredibly skilled in the pretend art of lightsaber fighting and makes it look natural and makes it look real. And you compare that to something that is clearly very choreographed. And it kind of demonstrated everything that was wrong with her character to me, where it just rang a false note in pretty much every way. I do agree with Haley, though, that the makeup artists and whatever they were doing with the Laku, that was, or the Montrals, that was greatly improved from when we first saw her in The Mandalorian. So kudos to them for making her look real, but it just, she shouldn't have been real in the first place, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, as my question setup indicated, I don't buy that argument about, you know, the passage of time explaining her personality change. She just, Rosario Dawson just did not have it. And I will say, in terms of the mannerisms, some of that is animation to live action. You just can't jump around and be as spry on your feet when you're a real human being, especially with the Montrals. But even without them, I mean, Sabine does some stuff in the animated show that no actress could possibly do in live action. So I don't want to make it sound like it's 100% Rosario Dawson's problem. However, she was the one to take on this responsibility, and I think she fell flat. Now, the big emotional journey that Ahsoka goes on in this episode is shaped by the pivotal scene in The World Between Worlds with Anakin. That is supposedly the turning point for her, where she has some kind of epiphany about herself and her life, and on the other side of it, she emerges noticeably brighter. There are a couple funny, witty moments after that sequence where I think we're supposed to believe that she has been transformed. She changes the way she dresses, she makes more jokes. And I guess I want to get into this particularly with Grace, but Haley, I'd love to know where you stand as well, because I already know that Grace and I disagree on this. But I think that this sequence, where we have these live-action Clone Wars flashbacks, we've got Rex, We see Darth Maul's, you know, Mandalorian troopers. It felt cheap to me. And it felt cheap because it was this grand spectacle with all this nostalgia. But it didn't feel like there was an actual lesson at the heart of it. It did not feel like Ahsoka was actually learning something new. It felt like they dressed it up in the trappings of this grand epiphany. There was all this dialogue that if you just look at it on the surface, it feels like Ahsoka is learning something profound from Anakin and from revisiting these moments in her life. But it's unclear to me what it is, and none of the cryptic dialogue that they have, and again, this gets back to the sort of like, it felt like it was supposed to be poignant. It felt like it was supposed to be grand and dramatic. But if you just scratch beneath the surface, it's unclear what it actually means. There was a lot of that in the sequence for me. Anakin kind of makes it sound like Ahsoka has to learn to be comfortable fighting. And Ahsoka kind of realizes, like, he's wrong. Or, like, she can, like he keeps saying, like, I want you to choose life or death. And she's like, no, I'm not going to make the choice. And I was watching this thinking to myself, what does that mean? You've been choosing life and protecting people and fighting to protect people your whole life. Are we supposed to believe that, like, this is a source of conflict for you, that you have to take life to protect life? It was like they were setting up that conflict for her, and it wasn't earned. There was nothing in her past, really, that made me feel like, oh, she's conflicted about fighting. Nobody wants to fight, but she has made her peace with the idea that this is what it takes to protect people. And so I just don't get this idea that she learned something profound, that she suddenly understood she had to choose life. Grace, why am I wrong? What did she learn here, and why was it actually more effective than I'm making it sound?
So I think part of our disagreement here is in how we are looking at this episode in the first place. So I'm not really considering it within the arc of Ahsoka's characterization across multiple shows or who she is as a person. I'm considering it within the show, the series Ahsoka, the first season. I think the episode with the World Between Worlds and the Anakin cameo was the most successful episode of the show. And yeah, part of that is based on nostalgia. But I also think it was the first episode that had anything actually interesting in terms of what it had to say. Like, we'd seen some cool lore stuff before, but The World Between Worlds is a whole nother level of lore. But also, I just do think it's very powerful to see Ahsoka as a child soldier. And you know, watching Clone Wars, that, yeah, she was this 14-year-old kid forced to become a warrior. But it's very different seeing that in animation and seeing that in live action. And that's actually one place where I think live action is successful here, because it makes you really realize the depth of the horror of forcing a teenager to fight these awful battles. So I really enjoyed it from the perspective of it being a good episode in the show, and from the perspective of saying, or really truly demonstrating, the issues with putting children in that position. And yeah, sure, I'll say it. I really enjoyed seeing Hayden Christensen again and watching him lightsaber fight again. I really wish they hadn't de-aged him. I'm very anti-de-aging, as longtime listeners will know. But the nostalgia worked on me. And yeah, it was a play, but I thought it was an effective one, particularly coming in a series that had otherwise skittered. It felt like this was an episode where everything gelled, and that was new and refreshing for this show.
Haley, what do you think? Where do you come down on this question of whether this was really a transformative moment for her, and whether it paid off, whether it actually went somewhere, essentially?
So I will continue with my, like, trying to be diplomatic at first. I think it was very well done, like what Grace is saying. I liked watching it. I think the actors did a great job. And I, like, in my most earnest, like, viewing of this, I can see what Dave Filoni was trying to do. But you were right, Eric, that there was no, like, clear message or reason for the, like, epiphany. Like, it just wasn't super clear to me what he was trying to say. And when I think about it and, like, try to understand what he was trying to say, I can sort of see, like, from the other episodes of the show, what he was attempting to do. And I feel like the writing just, like, didn't make it evident enough. I feel like the show... And like, clearly it's not good writing that I have to, like, theorize about what the lesson was. Yeah. But I feel like, I mean, the show really focuses on the Ahsoka-Sabine, like, Padawan relationship. And we find out in what, like, the last episode that Ahsoka stopped being Sabine's mentor because of, like, she was worried that Sabine would sort of turn to the dark side because a lot of her family died on Mandalore. Am I right? That was, like, the last episode or something. It was maybe the second to last episode. It's, like, one sentence in it.
That's so ridiculous.
Right. And so I feel like if it had been arranged differently, the lesson could have been, and it may have been intended to be, about Ahsoka's relationship with Anakin and, you know, fears that if she has her own Padawan, there's always that possibility that, like, Anakin turned to the dark side and she lost that really close relationship, and obviously all kinds of bad things happened. She sort of has to, like, choose to, like, live her life and to, like, pass knowledge on to the next generation despite that fear. But, like, maybe that's just me, like, adding too much to it and, like, trying to pull the strings together. but I feel like maybe that's what he was intending. I don't understand. I do think that, like, the choose life version of, like, it's just not super, it's just really vague. And, like, maybe it was trying to be profound, but, like you're saying, Eric, if you get a little bit deeper, it doesn't really make sense for that character. So I don't know. I guess I'm curious if you guys think I'm making that up too much about the Padawan relationship, or if you agree that, like, maybe that's what they were going for and, like, the editing or the writing didn't highlight it enough. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it was a good episode, like, or a successful episode. If it's, I'm not really sure what its place was in the show. I just liked it, and I thought that it was a good, how do I phrase this? I thought it was
enjoyable.
Yeah, an enjoyable episode of TV, and enjoyed how it was set up and how it felt and how the pacing within the flashbacks, Ahsoka finding herself, that felt more natural than the pacing of the rest of the show. But I agree. I think the choose life didn't really make sense. I think, Haley, your generous reading of it is probably what they were going for, because there was a lot of emphasis on Master Padawan relationships. If they had focused it, instead of choose life, on choose being a mentor, or this, you need to understand how difficult it is to be a mentor, especially in times of war. If they had made that the lesson, that would have made more sense to me. But I think there was intended to be some sort of lesson about mentorship there, but it wasn't necessarily executed very well.
Yeah, I mean, I think particularly when you look at, again, when Hu Yang tells Ezra about Sabine and her losing her family, and that being, you know, she wants to become a Jedi, and Ahsoka is worried that she's only doing it because she wants to get revenge, I think you can draw a connection there between Ahsoka wondering if maybe she is not on the right path because she has so much darkness in her past and because of who her master became, And then Ahsoka worrying that Sabine is essentially in it for the wrong reasons and will inevitably be corrupted by the dark side because she's in it to get vengeance. I think you can make a connection there and say Ahsoka stepped back from Sabine because of all this baggage that she was carrying that we see explored in The World Between Worlds. And part of what she goes through in this series is learning to accept that, okay, give Sabine a chance, right? I mean, you do not have to just sort of disengage because you're afraid that she's in it for the wrong reasons. Like, learn from your own past and see that there are ways to surmount the darkness in your life. Like, I think that explanation for how Ahsoka comes out of The World Between Worlds feeling more upbeat, and then also how we see her gravitate more towards Sabine, I think that makes a lot of sense. The weird thing for me is I don't understand why Ahsoka would be so black and white about it, no pun intended, in the first place, right? I mean, they make a whole thing, and I think, like, one of the first episodes is where it's, like, she kind of hints that, like, she tortured Morgan Elsbeth.
Oh, I didn't like that at all.
and I don't necessarily like it, but what I do like is that it points us to the fact that, as she told Darth Vader in Rebels, she is no Jedi. She has done things that the Jedi would not approve of. Maybe not that far in terms of what we like to see, but, like, the idea that, like, she is not a strictly black or white, light side, dark side person anymore. She understands that there are sometimes things you have to do that the Jedi wouldn't approve of. Again, maybe not torture, but, like, the idea that she would think of this in such a binary way, like, oh, I have darkness in my past, therefore I'm on the wrong path, or Sabine is motivated by the love of her family, therefore she's not going to be a healthy, mature Jedi. Like, that itself seems uncharacteristic of Ahsoka, because it's such a traditional Jedi view, and her whole thing at this point in her life is that she's not a traditional Jedi. So that just felt weird to me. But again, I think that the World Between Worlds stuff could have worked if the writing were focused on different aspects of this supposed epiphany. And this connects to something else that they try to do in the series with Bail and Skull, which is try to make it seem like Ahsoka is afraid of essentially becoming Darth Vader. Or that she's destined to become darkness incarnate, right? They have Baylan tell her that her legacy is going to be just like her master's legacy. And it was such a weird moment for me. I don't know if you guys thought this too, but I found myself, like, genuinely puzzled hearing that, because there's nothing in Ahsoka's past that we know of that would indicate that she has done anything to earn that kind of criticism. Like,
right.
It's like, yeah. There's no reason
for her to fear that. Plus, on top of that, of her, like, totally normal behavior isn't, like, in the Filoniverse, she is supposedly, like, has a deeper connection to the light side than pretty much anyone else. Right.
Yeah. Through the sister. Right. The daughter.
From the Mortis arc, yeah.
That's right, and we'll get to that as well. It was like, it's like Baylan was a character living in an alternate Star Wars universe, and the fact that all of this was written by the same guy who brought Ahsoka to life from start to finish is baffling to me. How did you write a character who said something so nonsensical? You're the one who knows better than anybody else that this makes no sense for a character to say about Ahsoka, particularly because Baylan himself is supposed to have some knowledge of Anakin, some knowledge of Ahsoka. Like, for him of all people to suggest that she was, like, had a dark legacy, it was the kind of thing that wasn't just wrong, but, like, made you mad because it was such an own goal. It was like you went out of your way to say something that makes no sense.
So the other thing for me, and this is also nitpicky, it's like, I thought it's supposed to be this big secret that Anakin became Darth Vader, and now it seems like everybody and their mother knows that Anakin was Darth Vader, and that just seems unrealistic to me in terms of no one's supposed to know, and even dark side, gray Jedi, whatever, baddie, I feel like they wouldn't necessarily know. And that just kind of bothered me. But the other thing that bothered me in terms of the writing is that it's just not good storytelling to say in an offhand line in the last episode by someone who's not even a main character, oh yeah, Sabine's whole family died, and that's why she's, you know, angry and Ahsoka doesn't want to teach her. What? You couldn't have done a little more show and not tell there, and just having the exposition bot Hu Yang say it. And I really enjoy David Tennant and thought Hu Yang was fun, but that just really fell flat to me as well. That didn't seem like very good writing. I think what I guess my sort of concrete thought tying this all together is that the writing didn't make sense to me in a lot of ways, which in turn didn't make sense because, like you said, Eric, it was all created by the same guy. So how did the same guy do this total 180? I just don't know.
Yeah, the whole, like, how did Ahsoka and Sabine have their falling out? At first, I was like, oh, okay, maybe we'll gradually get the story here. But then it was, like, super gradual and all just sort of put in that final episode, that one line. And again, I think the underlying tension between them is very interesting. I think the way that it was sort of elucidated for us was not very well executed. I will say I do like a few things about Ahsoka in this season. One is I'm happy to see that she sort of decides that she's going to trust Sabine more, you know, based on her experience, her own experience as an unconventional Jedi, right? She points out that she could always count on Anakin's support. I appreciate, you know, that felt like a believable bit of growth for her. I do worry that she was going a little too soft on Sabine for leading the, you know, Baylan to Thrawn, but, you know, that's a separate question. And I am interested to see in season two what we're going to see from Ahsoka. She ends the season feeling very zen about this predicament that she's in, being stranded in the other galaxy. And I guess that's interesting to see. It reminds me of the version of Ahsoka that we saw in the Rebels epilogue, you know, compared to sort of Gandalf in terms of this wise person who's almost above all the worldly conflicts. I just wish that that growth that we see by the time of that final episode was justified a bit better. It seems to all hang on the world between worlds sequence, which again, for me, did not work. I loved seeing Hayden Christensen. I love the Clone Wars stuff. I agree that seeing a live action Ahsoka does drive home just how young she was. And it was really a war crime of its own to put kids in that position. For me, that whole sequence is the crux of the show and it just doesn't hold up. But Grace, I understand your point that it is enjoyable to watch. And I do appreciate that, again, they're throwing a bone to the Clone Wars fans here because that's really where all this started. Let's talk a little bit about Sabine. I want to just say off the bat, I think she was the most successfully portrayed character on the show. I think Natasha Liu Bordizzo is excellent. She really nails Sabine's heart, you know, her wit, but also that kind of toughness and stubbornness. The introductory scene with her was fantastic. I think she is one of the few characters who consistently acts like a real person. That whole sequence in the episode, the first episode, I guess, where she's on the planet in the other galaxy and she's going to find Ezra, that whole sequence with her, the mount that she travels with and finding, like, the crab people, perfect. No notes, just very funny, very well done. She's a great actress. But I want to talk about the decision to make her Force-sensitive. I got the sense, when I alluded to this earlier, that Grace agrees with me. As everybody knows who listens to Hoth Takes, I love to have people agree with me. So, Grace, can you talk about why I'm so right that this was a bad decision that undermined Sabine's journey as an unconventional Jedi and left a bad taste in my mouth?
So, first of all, I do agree that Natasha Liu Bordizzo did a really nice job portraying Sabine. Unfortunately, I just really hated her character arc. Everything about what she did, or almost everything, fell really flat to me. First of all, I don't like that she wanted to be a Jedi in the first place. Why does everyone have to be a Jedi? Why can't we just have normal, strong people? And Sabine was already so freaking badass as a Mandalorian / graffiti artist. She didn't need the Force. She was already really cool and awesome on her own. And I just felt like that was wholly unnecessary. I did not like how her characterization. So first of all, I didn't like that about her wanting to be a Jedi. I did not like how she was so obsessed with finding Ezra that she does a really not good thing in agreeing to go with Balin Skull and give the witches the key thingy-mabob that takes them to the other galaxy. That's not a... Do you like my description of that?
No, it was a good description.
So that's not a great decision, but sure, fine, whatever. She's desperate to find Ezra. And then she gets to him and they don't even like have a really satisfying reunion.
What the heck? I so agree. Sorry, can we talk about that just for a moment? That is my biggest complaint about the entire show. You both know very, very well that I am so frustrated with the lack of romance in this era of Star Wars. And there is no, like, commitment. Everybody could be in love with anybody in this era of Star Wars, but they never do it. Like, they never, like, actually commit to a relationship in the writing. And I was so frustrated to see them not even, like... Did they even hug? I think they had like a
they
like
did
a
hug, but it was like a
there was like a side hug, and it was like, hey, like it was just like the most casual interaction for someone that you have been like pining after for 8 years. It was horrible, and they didn't even let us see Ezra hug Hera at the end.
Oh my god! Like, don't even get me started.
This is like her son. This is like her other son. Let them hug, and I promise you, it's because she had those stupid leku on her head, and then they didn't want to like ruin them or something. It's just like so many of those interactions would have been so different in a cartoon.
Yeah,
like, it would have been like there would have been actual emotion, and I don't know why they were so afraid of that in this show.
I'm not a Sabine Ezra shipper. I am much happier with them as a sibling relationship, although I respect your desire for romance in Star Wars. But even just following my interpretation,
they still love each other in that
they
situation.
They still love each other. They should be hugging and crying and
right,
talking.
There should be crying. There should be crying.
They should be talking about what he went through. It's insane that he's like, yeah, I never really thought about it. What?
Okay, that's the second biggest complaint. Ezra should be like the most powerful Jedi of all time.
Yes.
when they find him again. He has been like a hermit on a planet with like years to meditate. And all he did was hang out with little turtle guys, which, okay, it like goes with his character a little bit, but there could have been a little bit of growth, like force-wise, in my opinion.
Well, the problem is he didn't have a training remote. And as we know, the only way you can be a Jedi is if you practice with a training remote. I mean, we saw that in this episode. I think that pretty much makes it canon.
Wow.
So true, bestie.
So, Haley, I think, I don't know if you were saying this, but I'll assume you were saying this. I agree with you that there are some romantic feelings there, right? I think pining is a great word.
They are in love. They're going to have children.
Folks who listened to our preview episode, our prediction episode, know that I said there's no way they're not setting up romance. She's wearing his clothes. She's using his lightsaber. She's living in his house, and she's watching a hologram of him all the time. So, fine. If you don't want to actually pay that off, if you want to keep them as friends, as Grace said, that's fine. They still love each other, right? But there was no catharsis of you have finally found each other again. And I think part of that is the show is perhaps seemed like it was uncomfortable with just dwelling in that moment. It's almost like the show thought, Dave Filoni thought, like, we need to keep things moving. We can't just have them sit down for a conversation about, like, so tell me everything. And, you know, I guess we're supposed to assume a lot of that happened off screen. But again, like, you can't just say, oh, they resolved all that pathos off screen. Like, no, we want to see it. That's the point of the show. To show us this stuff. That's why we love these characters, because we like how they interact. It was unbelievable. And, you know, when we talk a little bit more about Ezra, we'll talk about the fact that he didn't even really push her on, like, so how did you get here and what
right.
does that mean?
Yeah.
Like,
how
that's
are
a whole,
we leaving?
That's a whole separate conversation. And she was just like, you know, it's a long story. And he was like, okay, cool, sounds good.
He hasn't seen, like, another human being in years. Like, also, he should be kind of crazy.
Yeah.
He should be
crazier.
You wanted Ezra to be more like Yoda.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have made more sense.
Just be bold. Be a little bit bold with it. And there was, like, I like to see that there's continuity with the character. but a lot has happened to him, and it's not realistic that he would be like the same goofy kid.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, I think one of the reasons that his visual portrayal works the best for me, except for, I guess, Sabine, which also works really well, is because his formative years physically, right, you know, puberty, essentially, takes place during the time when we don't see him. So everybody else is kind of in their same adult state, basically. I mean, Hera and Ahsoka especially have passed the point of, like, a lot of physical growth. And even Sabine, you could argue, that's fine, right? Ezra's the only one where you don't have a pre-existing expectation of what he's going to look like at this point because he has to have changed so much. And so that, to me, only underscored the fact that, like, he's had that much to change physically. Surely he's going to be, you know, there's going to be something sort of off, quote-unquote, about him or different. Something where Sabine shows up, and I actually think this would have been really interesting if she shows up kind of expecting the person that she got to know and he's different in some crucial way that throws her off. And there was none of that. And that's, in a sense, almost the more believable version. And what we got was kind of the less believable version of what would happen to a person after all that time.
Yeah.
So before we move on, I do want to defend, I disagree with both of you about Sabine.
Oh, okay.
And maybe it's because I'm viewing it as a religion, but I don't think it like conflicts to have someone who does art and graffiti, and also they're very good with weapons, and she wants to like meditate and like get closer to the force that connects all living things. Like, it's like, maybe you can be a little bit more religious, and that's like basically what being a Jedi is in this version of the universe. I don't think they conflict in any way, and I did like the idea of sort of an unconventional Jedi who isn't force sensitive. And I still think, like, to be generous to them, I still think that's an option. I think maybe she is just like more connected to the force in that galaxy. Like, maybe there is a very strong history of the force on that planet, and we see hints of that later with like the Mount Rushmore of the father and the son, I think, or who we end up seeing on the mountain with Baylan. And like, it's possible that she's able to like force push Ezra on that planet, and when she gets back to her other galaxy, is just like, it goes back to how it was before, and it was just like a period of time when she sort of had that deeper connection. I don't know if that's like realistic to expect from them, but it would be more creative storytelling than to just imagine that some like dam has broken and she's able to like use the force as well as anyone else now. But I don't take issue, like, fundamentally I don't take issue with her like wanting to be a Jedi or them doing that, because it's like, this isn't like the Incredibles with the bad guy who's like, everybody's super, so no one is. It's like, no, it's like in their like version of reality, this is like a religion. And as we have seen in the show, it's like, it's kind of a very real religion. like you have seen your friend like interact with the force. I mean, I'm sure if you guys saw your friends like Ezra was doing, if any of people that you love sort of had interactions with the force like that, I think you would be kind of interested too.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be closer to the force. And I agree with you. There's actually something kind of lovely about wanting to choose those elements of being closer to the force, finding that connection and that center within yourself. I'm not opposed to that. What I am opposed to is her wanting to be a Jedi like Ezra or Kanan or Ahsoka was a Jedi. So not just I want to be closer to the force within me spiritually, but I want to be a force wielding Jedi. And my real issue with that is just that we'd literally never seen an inkling of that in Rebels. You know, if that had been her characterization all along, where she secretly wanted to be a Jedi, that'd be one thing. But she never indicated that she did. And in her Jedi-ist moment, when she wields the Darksaber and learns how to fight with it, that's still about being a Mandalorian. That's not about being a Jedi. And then, so to have her want that in the first place, and then to make her force sensitive again out of nowhere, It just didn't make any sense to me, and I don't understand why everyone has to be that kind of Jedi. Why can't some people just be normal? So I will concede to you, Haley, that in terms of considering the Jedi as a faith and a tradition that she would want to follow in keeping with her lost loved ones like Ezra and Kanan, sure. Think that's lovely. Think that's great. In terms of her wanting to be a force-wielding, fighting Jedi, that just made no sense to me.
And the thing that really bothers me is that Ahsoka, in the early episodes, makes it clear that you can be a Jedi without wielding the Force, that it's about the mindset, it's about the discipline, it's about the patience. Like, that is kind of what you two were saying, is treating it like a religion where there are principles that you can live your life by. I don't really mind her wanting to learn the fighting styles. I'm fine with that, as long as it's all sort of contained to this idea of, like, this brings me closer to inner peace. It brings me closer to sort of a mastery of my body, of my mind. Like, when it's all done with the understanding that you don't have the Force, but that's fine because I, Ahsoka, am redefining what a Jedi is, I actually think that's interesting to say that you no longer need to do these things in order to be considered a Jedi. I think that's great, right? And that's what makes it annoying that they reveal that she has the Force. Because Ahsoka made it clear to her, you could be a Jedi without needing the Force. And for a while, I thought that's where they were going. There are a few moments where she tries to use the Force. She tries to pick up a cup, and it doesn't work. And they have this little close-up shot of, like, the cup that I thought was very cheeky. And it's like, that's great, right? She wants to be able to do this thing, but it's not really super important. It's just like, oh, let's see if I can try. But then she moves on because Ahsoka has told her that's not the most important thing. It's about your mindset. It's about your discipline and your worldview. I thought that was great. But they completely undermine that when they said, oh, no, actually, like, just trying hard enough unlocks something. I do think Haley's point about, like, it's just the other galaxy is interesting. Sort of like, you know, Superman can only use his powers, you know, when he's near Earth's sun or whatever. It doesn't fully work for me, again, just because, like, it's a very technical explanation, if true, for, like, a story point that's supposed to signal that it's, like, she's unlocked this sort of permanently and anywhere. Like, I think that's the implication that we're supposed to get, is that, like, she has discovered this thing in herself just by trying. And I don't like that. I know this is a divisive view, but I actually think that it's more interesting if the Force is midichlorians, some people have it and some people don't, and you can't just get it by trying. I think that makes it more mystical, more otherworldly, more inscrutable. I think you can separate that from behaving as a Jedi, but I want that part to stay that way. And this, it either gets rid of that, or it says, by the way, she had this all along, and she just never felt any inkling of it, which is very weird as well, because, as you pointed out, Grace, she trained with Jedi for a while. So if that was ever going to awaken in her, that would have been the time. So that's a long rant, but basically, very disappointing. I liked almost everything else about Sabine. Even as you guys were saying, Grace, you know, I also thought she made a very bad decision in bringing Baylan to Thrawn, but I thought it was a believable choice, particularly when you get the context of she, you know, wanted to become a Jedi after her family was killed because she wants to, you know, get vengeance or whatever. When you see that she's making decisions based on emotion, it lines up better with who she is, and it shows you that she doesn't yet have that level of detachment, which is debatable whether one should have that level of detachment, but it was believable. I believe that she would act that way, even if I disagreed with it. This was the one thing where I was like, this is really annoying.
Should we talk about Thrawn just a little bit briefly?
Yeah, I mean, so Thrawn, more so than Ezra, he's the reveal that everybody's been waiting for in live action here. I don't think that's controversial to say. Probably one of the most anticipated introductions in Star Wars history. And it's tough because on the one hand, you have Lars Mikkelsen's portrayal of the character, and does he fit with kind of that Thrawn personality? On the other hand, everybody is expecting grand strategy. They're expecting him to escape with some brilliant scheme that plays on his opponent's weaknesses. And I don't think we got that brilliant plan. I don't think that the way that he stalled Ahsoka was specifically like exploiting any weakness of hers. He makes a big point of realizing that she is Anakin's apprentice and treating her as very dangerous, which I thought was great, that she is that incredibly powerful person. But it's not like he discovers some insight about her that allows him to get away. It's a pretty cut and dry garden variety stalling tactic. And I guess I would like to start by asking if that bothered either of you, that we didn't get that quintessential Thrawn strategy that we see often in Rebels. It was kind of a more prosaic escape.
I would say my biggest issue with Thrawn is that he sounded right because it was Lars Mikkelsen voicing him, and Lars Mikkelsen voiced him in Rebels, but everything else about him felt wrong. I don't think that Lars Mikkelsen, as good of an actor as he is, has the right look for where Thrawn should be in this moment. Like, I know it's been a few years, but I still imagine him younger and more fit in terms of like being able to fight murder bots, which he does for fun in Rebels. I didn't think that we got that much great strategy. I also found it unrealistic that he wouldn't have known Ahsoka was Anakin's Padawan, although that is very nitpicky, but like, he worked with Anakin a long time ago. I feel like he should have known that. It was disappointing to me because it was almost right, but not quite there. And the thing that was most right about him was his voice and his affect, but everything else about him did not work for me.
I thought he did a good job. So I kind of disagree on the like look part of it. I thought it was fine. I think maybe like the color blue was a little bit like too light. I don't know. But my biggest, like, the challenge that he was facing in this is that his whole character is like supposed to be genius and like thinking a million steps ahead. And the like where we come into this story just didn't really give him the opportunity to show that at all. And like maybe like by writing more like challenges for him to overcome in this, like they could have shown it. But that would have like added, it would have bogged down the story a little bit. All he's trying to do is leave the planet. So it's like, it's not that hard of a like thing. Like maybe it's hard, but it's not like complex. And his whole character is solving like complex things and sort of like a space Sherlock Holmes. And that like, that just didn't come through because I don't know, it's just kind of like brute force where like I'm leaving, you know? Like do you disagree? I just feel like, like I said at the beginning, I think this story would have been better if the last two episodes were the first two episodes and like it had set up the rest of the season. I think there was a lot of, it was just, the whole thing was set up. I feel like we just missed out on what the story could have been, and we missed out on, like I was saying, so much like personal interaction, emotion, dialogue that would have happened if they didn't structure it this way. I don't know. I still do have high hopes. Maybe they'll turn it around because they've set it up now. Like clearly they felt the need to set it up. And if they do a season two, maybe we'll get like the more interesting parts of this story. But maybe that's optimistic of me.
Yeah. I mean, so I agree with Haley on the look only in terms of, I don't think he would necessarily be fit at this point. Maybe he didn't have any like combat droids to fight on the ship. It's been a while. Supplies have run low. I actually think that was a very interesting aspect to depict here, that his troopers have almost become feral and sort of fanatically loyal to him. I think the problem in terms of his portrayal, I agree, he sounds great. I think Lars Mikkelsen's face is just too obviously recognizable. It's just Lars Mikkelsen in blue makeup, and that's just always going to be a challenge to look past. That, for me, was the part of his appearance that was a struggle to overcome. I think, Haley, you're right. The very nature of the story that Dave wanted to tell was that there was not going to be a big set-piece scheme for Thrawn where he could outwit his opponents in some complicated way. He just needed to get off the planet. The fact that he had to wait so long was kind of silly. His ship was ready to go, but of course they needed time for the big final battle, so he had to take a few extra minutes. I think, you know, the other thing about Thrawn is I was grateful that he was there because he had some of the only good dialogue. like, say what you want about the way that Dave wrote the other characters, I actually think he had some very good lines that were, like, just on the right side of, like, overweening and like, sort of grandiose, like, because that's kind of who he is a little bit. So when he says, like, what was first just a dream has become a frightening reality for those who may oppose us, I don't know how you guys felt. I actually like that, and that kind of depiction of Thrawn as, like, you know, he's extremely confident. He's given to that kind of grandiose speech, even when he's not giving a giant speech to his troops. He's just talking to Morgan and the Night Sisters. I like that we see somebody like that in this moment. And I know it's, you know, not everybody was on board with all the dialogue, but I do think that overall he was good in terms of his portrayal. He was sort of boxed in terms of the story prevented him from having this brilliant plan for getting off of the planet. But I do like his conversations with Morgan about, you know, the tenacity of the Jedi and how we have to distract them rather than, you know, obsess about defeating them. And there's one moment where he's even fascinated by Ahsoka and Ezra and Sabine fighting together like the Jedi of old. The dialogue for him, I think, was probably pound for pound the best dialogue of any character. But, you know, again, we come back to, we're all waiting to see Thrawn do his Thrawn thing, and he didn't have room to do that in this episode.
I will say my favorite line, perhaps in this whole first season, I'm not going to get wholly correct, but he says something like, if you see any space whales, shoot them with extreme prejudice, which is just such an insane line, objectively speaking, but you hear it in that crisp British voice, like, if you see any space whales.
Well, because he knows better than anybody that when you see those guys, you got to get the heck out of Dodge.
With extreme prejudice, you absolutely gotta. It's just a very funny line.
I just wanted to say one last positive note. Ray Stevenson was so good.
He was so good.
He was just so good as Baylan.
R.I.P.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, I'm really sad that we're not going to get to see more of him. We'll talk about this in our next episode, but I think Baylan had a lot of promise as a different type of sort of darksider, and I liked a lot of what they did with him, but we'll get to that next time. All right, that brings us to the end of this episode of Hoth Takes. Like I said, we'll be back with more Ahsoka discussion in our next episode. Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you want to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com or find us on Twitter. We are at Hoth Takes. I'm Eric Geller on Twitter. Grace is Grace_Seegers, and Haley is Burdenator. Haley made our wonderful logo and incredible banner art. I edited the show, and I also put together our music. And again, for legal reasons, we want to point out that all Star Wars themes and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website. That's hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you like the show, please share it with a friend. You can tell them to find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms. We're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Google Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere else as well. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.